Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Hopefully the music will stay down. Okay, I think we're going to win here. You are listening to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Tim Ullman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Got a handful of things queued up for tonight. We've got Obamacare and the NSA, and in the second half of the show, I want to hit foreign policy stuff, just kind of as a broader topic. It is coming up now a bit, actually just here recently, but I had planned on talking about it anyway because there's been a lot of folks that I've run into in the outreach that I do and talking to people about libertarianism and liberty in general. And there is a misunderstanding about what the libertarian position on foreign policy really is. And so I wanted to touch on that in the second half of the hour as well. As a silly beginning, I mentioned last week the political rhetoric generator, so I just ran that again here real fast, and it came up with the following. I want an America where the media moguls and terrorists can't sabotage our cherished American values. But that was pretty entertaining. It that thing comes up with plenty of sillinesses. Anyhow, if you'd like to call in about any of the topics we're going to talk about tonight, feel free to do so. The number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we do have people that just call to listen. So if you want to talk, once you call in, it'll prompt and say, if you want to talk, press 1. And you can do that at any time. You can be listening and just hanging out and then decide you want to talk and you can press 1. So just so you all know that that option is there, but you do have to press 1. Otherwise, I have no idea you want to talk. And I'm not just going to throw somebody on cold because they might not want to talk. So it's a fair warning, my internet is all screwed up here this week. My internet starting Friday morning just went crazy. So if I don't see, if you press 1 and I don't see, I'm going to do a refresh here every few minutes on my screen just to try to force it to refresh just in case. But be patient. If you want to talk, we will get to you. We've never turned anybody down, even when we got pranked a few times. At least listened to them for a short bit before they were booted. Anyhow, all right, so the big news, I guess, of the week, Kentucky-wise, was the introduction of another candidate into the Republican primary for U.S. Senate next year. Mr. Bevin entered the race officially. He had talked back in, I guess it was February, about jumping into the race, but after that hadn't really said anything, and it was kind of unclear if he was going to jump in, if he wasn't. Now, that part of that was probably for campaign finance reasons. You know, they had there's all these different stupid rules, and that's, I guess, what the point is that with all these rules that are out there that require I don't even know how to explain it all, but basically it's Federal Exchange Commission, or not Federal Exchange, Federal Election Commission, has all kinds of campaign finance rules, and there's all these different rules about what you can and can't do and what you can say and can't say at different phases of your campaign. So, you know, basically he officially became a candidate this past week, and it's definitely shaking things up. The Republicans, I know, are taking sides, and with a lot of currently elected officials siding with Mitch McConnell, and a lot of the Tea Party and activists type siding with Bevin. And I've never met either person, so I don't know anything about it. And personally, I don't really care, which people don't understand. But, you know, I'm not playing in the Republican Party, so I really don't care. When you all figure out who your candidate is, then I'll care. But it is interesting, and it's newsworthy, and it's worth following. One of the things that came out of it that I thought was pretty interesting was that Bevin has been invited to Fancy Farm. And Mitch McConnell's campaign is saying that everybody who has filed should be, or declared, should be invited, which would apparently be Gurley Martin is the other Republican in the race. So I guess there's three at this point. And there are already four total announced Democrats besides Allison Grimes, which are Ed Marksberry, Benny Smith, and Greg Lichty, which I might be saying that wrong. If I am, sorry. I don't know who you are. As I mentioned last week, I am going to try to get all these guys that aren't getting FaceTime some media exposure. I'll invite them to come on the show. I think it'd be very interesting to have a good 15-minute conversation with these folks to find out where they stand on issues. Certainly it's not going to hurt this audience or their campaigns to find out who they are. And, you know, maybe one of them's really, really good. I know Gurley Martin, I know him in passing, is very much an old paleo conservative. And I think that he's one that a lot of Republicans would like if they would ever get to meet him and know him. And that's just somebody that I know. I think I've heard of Marksberry before, too. The other two guys, Benny Smith and Greg Lichty, I'm sorry, dude, I am so bad at pronouncing names like that. Don't be offended. I mean, my name gets butchered, too. But anyhow, the point is that, I think that there's legitimate choices out there. And if they pay the filing fee, that to me is kind of the threshold, right? If you're willing to put $500 on it, you know what? Maybe you should get at least a little bit of media exposure for that $500 you've dropped. And the media should at least say, hey, you know, here are all your options. These are all the people you're going to have. And if the media is filtering, if the media is the one doing the filtering and not letting the other candidates be heard from at all, then really they're doing a disservice to the public. And we've been over this before, but It's not a service to the public to have the media filter these choices that the people do have on election day, in this case the primary, and likewise the general. Now, speaking of the general, I'll be very interested to see if an independent or a libertarian or a green or whoever jumps into the race as well, if Mr. McConnell's campaign, Senator McConnell's campaign, will be as anxious to encourage Fancy Farm organizers to invite all of the declared candidates. And I'm guessing that they're not. But, you know, they claim here that, as the nation's leading champion of the First Amendment, Mitch supports the right of every Kentuckian to speak out. And that's a quote from Jesse Benton, who is McConnell's campaign manager. So it'll be interesting to see if that translates through about a year from now. One of the big things coming out of the whole McConnell-Bevin thing that's been started up here is that the different Tea Parties are going different directions. And it's really, you know, if you've done any work with the Tea Parties and if you've talked to them for any amount of time, and I have talked to almost all of them. There's a handful that didn't want to talk to me, so whatever. But the Tea Parties that I know, it really shouldn't be a whole lot of surprise that they're not really hot for Mitch McConnell. And, in fact, a handful of them have darn near endorsed Mr. Bevin, if they haven't endorsed him. At the same time, some of these crazy national groups, these national Tea Party groups that I really believe are just front groups, fundraising groups for Republican candidates, have endorsed McConnell. And so it's kind of interesting because now there's a fight in the media. Two national Tea Party groups, have endorsed McConnell. Meanwhile, the local Tea Parties, by and large, have not. And I don't know of any Kentucky-based Tea Party that has endorsed McConnell at this point or voiced any sort of support for McConnell. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out for several reasons. Because, you know, if McConnell wins, will the Tea Party vote for McConnell anyway? And that's probably the bigger question. If McConnell were to win, would the Tea Party vote for him anyway? Because, and understand there's a dynamic to all of this stuff. If you're willing to vote Republican regardless of who the Republican candidate is, or if you're willing to vote Democrat regardless of who the Democratic candidate is, then there's no incentive in the primary to actually pick someone that reflects your values, because it doesn't matter. As long as they get through the primary, you're going to vote for them. That's really the ugliness, the real ugly part of the two-party mechanism that they've tried to create, is that if they give you your choice between dumb and dumber, and you're going to vote, you're just going to vote for dumb, well, you still pick something bad. And that's kind of the downside of the whole mess, is that at some point you have to realize as a voter that you should be voting for the best candidate. And if there's nobody there that you really can say and look at yourself tomorrow and go, you know, I'm kind of glad I voted for that person, then don't vote for them. I mean, that's all I can tell you. That's the only way. It's competition, right? It's just like between GM, Ford, and Chrysler, right? GM and Chrysler took bailouts, and there were a lot of people that were upset that they took bailouts. And so as a result, they went and bought Ford, because Ford did not take the bailout. That is acting with your feet, right? That's or with your dollar. It's making your voice heard, not in a way that people went out and screamed and yelled in the streets, ah, this bailout's horrible. They just went and spoke with their dollar. They spoke by saying, hey, I'm going to go buy a Ford, because they didn't take a bailout. And I saw lots of people do that. Likewise, when it comes to voting at the voting booth, you know, especially if there is a third option, but if there's not, I mean, if there's no good cars that you want to buy, and I've actually been in this position recently. I went out car shopping, and it was just really nothing that tickled my fancy. I couldn't justify 5 years of car payments and higher insurance and all that stuff over what was out there. You know, I'm looking for something with good gas mileage that runs all right, you know, and is going to be reliable. And, well, that's compared to what I have now, which is a paid-off vehicle that is old, but it's fairly cheap to maintain. I don't see any reason to do anything to go out and buy a new car from anybody. And so be it. But the point is that we need to be demanding higher quality products that actually meet what we want out of our politicians. And it will happen over time. If you make those demands, they will happen. Because political parties exist to get candidates elected. And if they lose election after election after election, they will change. They have to change to survive. If they don't change, they'll die. And if they die, something new will be born in their ashes. And if the thing that's born in their ashes doesn't listen to the public, it will die. And it will repeat until something that actually does reach enough voters to win is born. That's how competition makes the ballot box better. Anyway, spending too much time on that, we got a lot to cover here. So, again, if you want to call in, 858-683-1326. Let's see here, Obamacare, and man, we've beat Obamacare pretty hard here in Kentucky. I have a fun story here from Brett Guthrie talking about how Obamacare is on track to crush families and small businesses. And it's funny because he put out this whole thing about how it's so horrible, and it is. I mean, make no mistake, it's bad. It's really bad. But the question is, what has been done about it? I mean, did they stop? Did they rip the funding out when they did the budgets? No. They sure could have. They control the House. All spending starts in the House. Cut Obamacare off at the knees with no funding, no ability to fund the program, and the whole thing dies. Pretty straightforward. There's no money to implement the policy. The policy doesn't get implemented. And, you know, I think we talked about this in the past, but there's more data and more graphs and more charts on employment and the change in how people are employed because of Obamacare, and how now we're basically switching over to part-time workers. And it's being done to try to dodge some of Obamacare's more onerous portions. I think that in the end, it's probably not going to matter. But what's going to end up happening is everybody's going to end up in the state-based exchange or the federal exchange. And that's where that's heading. Now, here in Kentucky, there's been several lawsuits on the exchange and the expansion of Medicare. And that's been driven by David Adams, who we've had on the show before. And it's not looking too good for Obamacare here in Kentucky. The exchange is it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the courtroom. But they did not have the authority, based on what I can tell. Bashir did not have the authority to just carte blanche create the exchange without legislative approval. So that'll be pretty interesting to see how that comes out. Let's see, what other interesting news has there been here? Obama and McCain, there's been a lot of McCain hating from my Republican friends here recently, because McCain said that, well, you know, the Democrats aren't that bad. And, well, you know, the only people who run around proud to be Republicans at this point are hardcore Kool-Aid drinking Republicans. And, I mean, well, for that matter, anybody who's proud to be a Democrat. I mean, Republicans and Democrats have failed so badly for the past, like, 12 years that there isn't anybody running around really saying, oh, yeah, I'm a Democrat. It's awesome. Democrats are great. And there's nobody running around going, oh, yeah, I'm a Republican. Republicans are awesome. Except for the people who are the hardcore Kool-Aid drinkers. So my hardcore Kool-Aid drinking Republican friends are very upset because McCain has committed cardinal sin number one in Republican Kool-Aid land, and that said that the Democrats aren't bad people. Because, remember, there's nothing really different in what they're doing. I mean, what Obama has done is nothing different than any Republican hasn't tried to do as well. I mean, Obamacare, you could claim, is different, but Romney, their candidate in 2012 here, was the guy that implemented the baby brother, the grandfather, the whatever you want to call it, the test run of Obamacare in Massachusetts. And proudly so, and claimed that he had helped form the policy for Obamacare, you know, back in 2010, 2011. He was all proud of that, and then once he became a candidate, well, you know, no, I'm against it now because I'm a candidate, and I have to differentiate myself somehow, so I'm against it, even though I was for it, and claimed to be part of the group that helped mold it, but now I'm against it. Right. So McCain now is buddying up with Obama, and boy, does that have Republicans just on fire. It's and by Republicans, I mean the Kool-Aid drinking Republicans, on fire, and it's hilarious to watch. The real problem that McCain has at this point is that the only people who would support him at this point are the hardcore Kool-Aid drinking Republicans, and the hardcore Kool-Aid drinking Republicans don't like when you praise a Democrat in any way, because that's not our team. What? Huh? What? So, hard times for Mr. Maverick himself. Let's see here. So let's get into the NSA stuff. Justin Amash had an amendment that he placed into a bill that would have curtailed the ability of the NSA to monitor everyone. Right? What he put in the bill was to cut the funding to the program that monitors everyone, specifically that program. Now, some people were saying, he's defunding the NSA entirely. That wasn't true. Some people claimed that it was a law to make it illegal. That wasn't true either. All it did was specifically remove the funding for the program. Now, in Kentucky, we have six congressmen. We have five Republicans and one Democrat. And unfortunately in Kentucky, four of our congressmen, all of whom were Republicans, voted against Representative Amash's amendment. The two people that voted for it were John Yarma and Thomas Massie. And it was an interesting story about how this was an issue that brought together liberal Democrats and libertarian-leaning conservatives, and they tried to get rid of this. And it, I mean, it was close, 205 to 217. So basically 12 votes was the margin, which means that you needed six people, well, I guess technically seven. I don't know, those six would work, yeah, to flip sides and go the other way. Well, four of those people were right here in Kentucky. In Ohio, hardly had anyone go for it as well. It's interesting because somebody had put up a map online about where the votes against this NSA program came from. And most of it wasn't anywhere in the Ohio Valley. It wasn't Ohio, Indiana, or Kentucky. But what was interesting is that in Tennessee, I don't remember how many districts they have. I think they have nine there. I could be wrong. But basically, they have two Democrats. Everybody else is Republican. And in Tennessee, all the Republicans voted for it, and one of the two Democrats voted for it to strip that away. But it's funny because, you know, I'm in the Cincinnati area, and there's another talk show host here who claims to be libertarian. And he's in love. He's got a man crush on Brad Wenstrup. He's a Republican. And Wenstrup voted against this measure. And, of course, also House Speaker John Boehner, who's in this area, Cincinnati area, voted against it as well. And, in fact, if you look at the breakdown, while it was truly a dispersal, Republicans, the majority of Republicans were against the bill. The majority of Democrats were for the bill. And it kind of explains the breakdown is that you do have some Democrats out there that are very much not concerned with civil liberties. And Wenstrup, in this article here in the Northern Kentucky Inquirer, said that the program that they were trying to cut, supposedly, allegedly, has thwarted 54 specific plots, many targeting Americans on American soil. So let's review what was said here. So there were 54 plots total. Not all of them were on American soil. Some of them were overseas. And in theory, this program is the only sole reason that these people were found. Now, first of all, I don't really believe that. I'm pretty sure that there are other mechanisms that are being used to track these folks and other things that can be done to raise red flags, but let's say 10 of them couldn't have been stopped, right? I mean, look at the Boston Marathon bombing, right? The NSA program didn't stop that. But let's say there were 10 of them that couldn't be stopped. Let's, you know, whatever. We'll make Boston Marathon number 11. The question I have is, do we live in fear and give away all of our rights because we live in fear? That's really the question that needs to be answered. Because what this program does, essentially, is that we're all suspects. Every single person is a suspect. Everyone is a suspect. Because we learned in the news that the NSA spying doesn't just end here in America. It goes into Europe and other countries and nations around the world. So everyone is a suspect. Do you really want to be treated as a suspect? Have you done anything other than be alive that would make you worthy of being a suspect? Not in the traditional sense, certainly. At least most of you. That's my point, is that we're being treated as suspects, and our rights are being violated, ostensibly to protect us from some threat. But first, I'm not convinced that every threat couldn't be thwarted in some other way. Maybe this is easier, maybe. But liberty isn't easy. I mean, it's easy to live under a dictatorship. Hey, whatever that guy says is the law, right? That's easy. What we have is a representative republic, a democratically elected republic. And the goal behind that is to keep government in check, to protect our rights, specifically to protect our rights. Our founding fathers had lived under a king. They knew what that meant. Oh, it may be efficient, but it doesn't protect liberty. And that's a problem, right? I mean, that's we have to protect our liberties. And you'll hear people, well, you know, you can protect liberty, but if you're dead, then you have no liberty. Yeah, I know. But we can't live our lives in a constant state of fear either. We can't give up everything for some illusion of security. The reality is most of the stuff that's happened since 9/11, security-wise, a big chunk of it is just BS to make you feel safe. Really. It's not going to matter. I mean, at the end of the day, things still happen. Even with these programs and all that, I mean, like I said, the Boston Marathon bombing happened. And it's terrible and it's tragic, and I don't want it to happen. Of course not. But I don't want 400 million people's rights trampled on to protect 10 people, 20 people. I mean, that, not to sound completely callous, but that's a minute fraction of the public that we're protecting at the expense of a huge amount of the public's rights. And that's what we have to keep in mind here. We're talking about, you know, even 9/11, which, you know, was 3,000-some people that died, which was horrible. But there's 400 million people. Well, you know, let's go with the real number, the supposed real number, 300 million. 300 million people in the country. 3,000 of them are killed. What percentage is that? Boy, I can't even do that math that fast. We're down in the thousandth place, I think, of a percent. I mean, it's tiny. It's less than one. 1% would be 300,000. So we're at 1/100th of a percent. I think I'm doing the math right. I don't have paper in front of me. I don't know. But the point remains the same. We can't give up our rights for 0.001% more safety. And that's what we're doing. And I think the public's realizing it now. And we see now the public has turned. And I just hope that we hold on to that until this next election. We have to get some people into office who are willing to protect our rights. Because obviously the ones there now are not. I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats or whatever. If you're not willing to protect our basic rights, get out of there. Go home. And if you want to feel all safe, you take your congressional pension and dig yourself a bunker 45 feet in the ground, and you live in your bunker. The rest of us will take our chances at a 0.01% increased chance of harm in a worst-case scenario or the worst that's happened. I mean, really. And all this talk is now one of the things that came out is Rand Paul is now leading the pack for GOP hopeful presidential candidates, which, of course, has then in turn made him the target of everybody else who's even eyeing the race. And this NSA vote and some of this other stuff, I mean, it's no secret where Rand Paul stands on this. He's not one calling Edward Snowden a traitor. He's saying that he was civil disobedience. And I would tend to disagree with the civil disobedience part, but I think it's more of, it's certainly not treason. You know, nobody's dying because of this leak. The only thing that's dying are government jobs. Well, in theory, that was the only thing put at risk, let's put it that way, were government jobs. But what's his name here? Peter King from New York is out bashing Rand Paul, calling him the McGovern of the Republican Party, claiming that he's soft on the war. Blah, 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 blah. But I have to tell you there, Mr. King, quite honestly, people are sick and tired of the war, around the country. And if you want to take a war footing, if you want to be the one to say, well, we need to keep fighting, we need to expand our victory, yeah, good luck with that. That's not going to work out real well. The downside of the NSA thing failing this past week is that there's a new story in Wired out a day or two ago saying now that they've escaped Congress, lawmakers, the Wired article is about who voted for the NSA spying. So the NSA spying, basically the ones that voted against the measure to reel in the NSA, on average, receive double the defense industry cash that those who do not, or those who were in favor of rolling it back. And so, essentially, what it comes down to is that a number of these folks are bought and paid for by the defense industry. And that's what it comes down to. You know, these races are so big that we have to, any candidate with a quote-unquote legitimate shot has to raise millions of dollars. And, well, where do you raise millions of dollars? But from lobbying groups and lobbyists. And that's really the core problem with what's broken. And we can have a whole show on how to fix that. But the point is, the defense industry certainly played a role in the defeat of your Fourth Amendment rights. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, the feds now, the NSA, are now demanding that online internet providers give them your password. Your password. So they're asking for it. They're demanding it. And this is an article on CNET. And so basically, they asked a number of companies. Microsoft spokesperson said they would not say whether or not they had received such requests, which, again, that goes back to the secret courts where you're not allowed to talk about what you've been asked to do. But the Microsoft spokesman said, no, we don't, and we can't see a circumstance where we would provide passwords. Google also declined whether or not to elaborate on whether or not they'd been asked to provide user passwords, but they said that they never have. Yahoo also would not say whether or not they had received such requests. You get the picture here, folks. This is the secret courts where you're not allowed to tell anybody that you've been given a subpoena to give this information. But what's scarier is that Apple, Facebook, AOL, Verizon, AT&T, Time Warner Cable, and Comcast were all asked the same question and did not respond for comment, which is worrisome. Makes me think maybe they did, and now they don't want to talk about it because they're not allowed to. And it would also be a PR nightmare if they actually did. Anyway, I guess the point is that now, emboldened, they want your password now too. The hilarious part about it, and we're going to wrap up. I know we're long on this segment, but I want to finish up the news of the week, and then we'll get into stuff after the break. The NSA, somebody filed a Freedom of Information Act request against the NSA. Basically, they wanted copies of some emails. And the response back was that the NSA, and this is legitimate usually when an agency actually can't, but the NSA says that it cannot search its own emails, which is absolutely hilarious, considering they're collecting everyone's emails. They said that there is no central method to search an email at this time with the way our records are set up. They claim their system is a little antiquated and archaic. Now, first of all, I call BS. I mean, I've been working in IT for 16, 17 years? I mean, I started out back in, 90, early 96, yeah. And I've been working, my first job was in a Novell environment with a program called GroupWise, which if you don't know IT or weren't really on computers back then, you wouldn't know. But that was kind of the big mail program of the day. And even that had the capability of going through and you could do it. If you needed to find an email, you could. And in fact, we did find an email once at the company I was at, which no longer exists. But that's another story. The point is, it absolutely can be done. They just don't want to. And let's be honest. I mean, these bureaucracies, the last thing they want, especially the NSA right now, the last thing they want is transparency. Transparency scares them because transparency is what's getting them their nifty little project cut in half or eliminated or whatever, or trying to anyway, and has the public outraged at them. And it should be a lesson here. This is why oftentimes bureaucracies are not very communicative with the public, because the public finds out what's going on and goes, whoa, hey, we didn't sign on for that and we're against that. And the funny thing is, though, again, as I've talked about before, you know, if you'd keep people informed all the way through, you'd probably have a better chance of the public accepting your program. And it wouldn't be such a drastic negative reaction. There might be a little bit of pushback, and there might be a point where, no, no, you can't go there, but you can go some other way. And it's not a huge deviation. But, you know, this NSA spying program is basically built. Now it's just a matter of creating the monster server farms and data farms to collect all the information and collate it and parse it and do all that jazz. So, I mean, this thing's already on its way. Anyway, I'm just disappointed that that amendment didn't pass, and I'm very disappointed, and I hope that all these people that say, well, Republicans are for liberty, realize that they're not. And I will applaud that, on the whole, the Democrats that were elected to Congress voted against it. Although, you know, if you'd gotten six more to vote for it, or excuse me, not against it, but they had voted for the provision to reel in the NSA. But if you'd gotten six others to do it, I mean, and that's the one thing I'll fault both the libertarianish Republicans and the liberal Democrats, is that you guys couldn't convince six more people to flip. I mean, it's so close. So close. And I know the defense industry is big, and I know that the NSA's gut pool, and I know they probably scared you all senseless trying to claim that, well, you caught fish, and there will be dead bodies in the street, and then we'll just say, well, that's because this person didn't refund our program. Ba-ba-da. Oh, sure, I know. I know. But you got to look out for more than your own personal political future. You have to look out for the rights of the American public. That's the key. That's what you're there to do. So protect us. Protect us from the government. Protect us from the bureaucracy. That's what we need protection from more than anything right now. Whether it's the NSA or Obamacare or the IRS, we need protection from the bureaucracy that your predecessors created. That is what we need protection from. Folks, we'll be back here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We'll be right back.
a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And, boy, I ran long in the last segment there, and I apologize. But I do want to get to the libertarian foreign policy. And I got into a debate about this, and there's been a handful of them. And because I think libertarianism is on the rise, that there's a lot of intentional misconstruing of the libertarian position. And also, there's people that tend to listen to the more extreme views rather than the ones that put forth an actual workable foreign policy. So I don't claim to be a foreign policy expert. And I don't claim to, I don't claim to be an expert really in a whole lot. But when it comes down to it, what we're doing today is not working. And let's start there. So we have military bases. Oh, I forget how many countries. I want to say 82 countries around the world. And, you know, the thing is, we're there ostensibly to be providing security and protecting freedom. It's all being done on our dime. These countries basically are being funded by us. We are redistributing the tax money of the United States taxpayer, whether it's direct money now or borrowed from somewhere else, to these other countries to provide them their security. So that then they can slack off and do other things with that same money that they should be spending on their own defense. They're instead spending it on things like socialized health care or, you know, whatever stupid policy they decide to implement. Something that wouldn't be as important as national security, but that's covered by the United States. So, hey, we'll do something else. And so I personally, my view on this, is that we do not need all these bases around the world in general. But I also don't believe in cutting people off at the knees. And so my perfect plan, if you will, involves weaning these countries off of us, off of our national security budget, and onto their own. And that's done one of a few ways. Number one, you tell each country, and we can, you know, prioritize and say, okay, these countries don't really need any help at all. And, you know, we could probably start closing some bases there and reassigning people back here and to say we kick people out of the military, but certainly as they leave, we don't need to replace them because, well, we're doing less. And so, you know, we'll save some money there over the long term right away. The next thing you do is you start looking at some of the other countries that don't really need it or definitely could afford what we're doing for them. And you say, okay, listen, we're going to start packing it up. We're not leaving tomorrow, but, you know, we put a timetable together on our withdrawal from your country. And if you want us to stay longer, that's cool, but you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to actually pay for us being there. Not the whole bill right away. I mean, we're not trying to, you know, smack you. We're not trying to be unreasonable here. But we're going to start making you pay for some of this. And that payment is going to go up, right? The longer we're there, the more the payment's going to be until we reach the point where they're paying for it 100%. Now, some people will say, well, oh, my gosh, you're making America mercenaries. But we're not. Because, first of all, our military is not efficient. And anybody who says otherwise, well, yeah. You haven't talked to anybody who's been in the military. But, more importantly, once they're paying the full cost, why would you outsource that to another country anyway? I would actually say once you get above 50 to 60% of the cost being paid by you, that you're going to want a tighter control over what's being done in your country anyway. You know, when it's free, you don't get a lot of choice. You know, when somebody's giving you something for free, you can't legitimately say, well, you know, I like that, but boy, if somebody gave you a car for free, you can't say, boy, thanks for the car, but man, could you put a bigger engine in it? Or, oh man, could you put better rims or tires on it? I mean, it's free. You don't have any control over it. But once it gets to the point where it's like, well, you know, you're only giving me 25% of the cost, and boy, you know, your cost is really high anyway. You know, for the same money we're spending, we could do this ourselves, and we could actually do what we want. That's what you would see, is that the countries that could afford their own security would wean themselves off pretty quickly, because they're not going to pay us for it, because they can do it themselves. Now, the last category are the countries that legitimately can't pay for it. You know, dirt poor countries that can't pay for anything. That's where things get sticky. And, you know, I think that that has to be handled on a case-by-case basis. I don't think you leave anybody high and dry, especially not immediately. But there has to be a mechanism in place to transfer that responsibility somewhere. We cannot afford to be the police of the world. Your local police are funded by taxes, right? It's your taxes that they're being funded by. And sure, sometimes they get a grant from the feds, but technically that's our money too. So taxes are what pay for our police actions in our neighborhoods and in our cities and counties and whatever, in our state, and et cetera. That's the same tax money that should be being spent here is being spent overseas to be police forces for other countries and be the policemen of the world. We don't have that capital. We don't. We're, what, $16 trillion in debt now and rising? We're over 100% of our GDP in debt. I think we're 105, 108, maybe 110 now. I honestly haven't looked at the numbers in a while. We can't afford to keep doing what we're doing. And that goes for a myriad of things. But we can't afford, a huge chunk of this is military. And if you're going to make any cuts and really reel in the spending and not put our children into a giant debt hole that they can't escape from, because the country can't declare bankruptcy, it's not going to happen. If they did that, every country would just declare bankruptcy and they would make a big old mess. Nobody's going to be allowed to declare bankruptcy. The banks won't allow that. But there has to be a way for us to cut back our expenses. We have to quit losing money on stuff that we're not really responsible for anyway. It's not my responsibility. Now, and this whole conversation came up, a good friend of mine who's a bar owner the other night. You know, it's not my responsibility to pay for your security. You know, you can't tell me, hey man, I want you to come over to my house and guard my stuff and make me do it. Now, I might do it because I'm a friend, you can't make me do that. And in fact, I have no responsibility to go to your house and guard your stuff. If I have other things to do, whether with my time or with my money, I'm under no obligation to go to your house and guard your stuff. It's your stuff. And in America, we've recognized this at a U.S. Supreme Court level, that even our police are not the primary responsibility of our police is not to protect you or your stuff. The primary responsibility to protect you and your stuff is you. That's been decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, which makes sense. The police can't be everywhere all the time. You'd have to have a policeman for every person. And actually, there's some crazy math there that might mean it's even more than that, because somebody has to protect the policeman's stuff while the policeman's out protecting your stuff. I mean, the point is, it can't be done. The primary responsibility for protecting you and your stuff is you. That's been decided by our Supreme Court. And it's logical. Think about it. That responsibility starts with you, it ends with you. At your home, locking your doors starts with you. Keeping valuables out of your car at night starts with you. Locking your car doors starts with you. If you have something of value, you don't run around and telling the world, hey, man, I got this $1.5 million thing in my house, man. You should come get the chicken after. That's a real good way to get broken into and have your $1.5 million thing stolen or whatever. The primary responsibility lies on you. And likewise, these countries have a vested interest in protecting themselves. And the primary responsibility to protect their land and their people is on them, not us. And they certainly cannot demand that we provide it for them. First of all, we don't have to. I mean, how are you going to make us do it? We don't have to. And more importantly, we don't have that responsibility. And we don't. And equally importantly, we don't have the money to do it anyway if we wanted to. And so there has to be a transition here. And I'm not one that says we pack it up and leave and we're out of everywhere in a year. We're not going to be able to do that, folks. And I know some of my more radical friends will say, oh, that's crazy. We can do it. And who cares about the rest? Well, you know, it's not cool. All right. If you, in the scenario I gave, if you had a friend that said, hey, man, I need you to guard my house, right? And you say, okay, sure, dude, I'll guard your house for the weekend. You can't decide Saturday night, you know what, man, I'm just sick of this. I'm just going to go home. That's not cool. You told your buddy you'd watch it all weekend. The least you owe your buddy, if you have a reason to leave, is a phone call. Hey, man, I got to leave. Can you find somebody else to do this? Can you come home? Can we, you know, it's your primary responsibility to do this. Is there some other way you can take care of this? Because I can't anymore. I'm sorry. That's the situation we're in. We've made the commitment to these countries that we would be there. But it's a commitment we can't fulfill anymore. We can't afford to fulfill it anymore. And we have no real responsibility other than just not being a jerk about it and saying, see ya. What we can do is say, look, we can't afford this anymore. So starting on this time, we're going to start pulling some stuff out, unless you start paying us for it. And if you pay us for it, well, then it becomes more reasonable for us to do it. And the more, again, the more that these countries have to pay for it, the more likely they are to take over responsibility for themselves. Because at some point, it no longer makes sense to pay an outside entity for something so crucial as internal security when they don't have the ability to dictate what happens anyway. It's their responsibility to protect themselves. It's your responsibility to protect yourself. It is no different. That, in my opinion, is a logical position consistent with libertarian principles, workable, doable, attainable. It's, we can't afford to do anything else. And if we argue over the extremes of we need to be everywhere and we need to be nowhere, well, nothing's going to change. And our military budget will continue to spiral out of control. That's what we have today. We can't afford it. It has to change. That's all. It has to change. So I got time. I got another minute and a half here. So I'm going to mention one more quick story, and then we're going to call it a night. We had a cop fired for speaking out against ticket and arrest quotas. And a lot of bureaucracies, a lot of the police departments out there are feeling the pinch, man. This prolonged recession has finally hit the government side. They're really getting pushback from the taxpayers who aren't letting them raise taxes. And so they're going out, and you see it here in Kentucky, man. They're all over the place, more so than I've ever seen them. and they're pulling people over for stupid things. It gives the police a bad name. But as this story points out, it's in reason. Having quotas actually decreases safety because people distrust the police and the cops get busy doing stupid things rather than actually patrolling for things that would actually be harmful to, you know, for people breaking into homes or doing whatever. Quotas are bad. We should fight those. I'm fighting them. Well, I'm just starting to. And I hope you'll join me because we need to put an end to this quota garbage. It's good for no one. Absolutely no one. Folks, that's the show. I hope you all had a good week. I hope you all have a good week coming up. Tune in next week to Liberty Unbridled here. Same network, same time, 7 p.m. Eastern time every week we're here. And until next time, take care. This is Big Ken Moment on Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.